Back Talk is an extension of the long-running, award-winning movie review show, It's Movie Time, which airs Fridays at 4:01 and 8:01 p.m. on WCBE 90.5 FM, Columbus, Ohio. Produced and hosted by John DeSando, this podcast features additional content and banter with guests. Back Talk is listed by FeedSpot as one of the top 10 movie review podcasts on NPR.
Oh, I love hearing that. I'm John DeSando.
And I'm KG Klein.
And this is Back Talk. If it doesn't have Sigourney Weaver, how good can it be?
It can be very good. And I'm happy to be able to say that. I was really nervous about this one. For those who don't know, we're talking about Alien Romulus.
Yes, nice for us to say the title, right?
Yeah. And there are so many of us out there who are very invested in the Alien franchise. I mean, we grew up with them. I was in the theater when I was 15 watching Alien and one of my first R-rated movies and fell in love. And then, of course, James Cameron gave us Aliens, which was just as good but completely different. And then I think we're up to 8 movies with this one.
Well, we were talking Ridley Scott, first one, right?
Ridley Scott, well, the first one was written by Dan O'Bannon and Ron Shusett. Dan O'Bannon, somebody I actually knew when I was auditioning in L.A. They wrote this script called Star Beast, which through a process of rewrites became known as Alien and was directed by Ridley Scott as a project that was handed to him. He wasn't really involved in the writing of it at all.
Well, you know, people forget film, movies are visual as well as oral. And visual is where they really can capture you. I am now, even having seen it decades ago, never forgetting the first image of that phallic monster coming out of the...
And I'm glad you brought that up, because Alien had the best team of artists working on it, I think, in the history of film. They had a group that had been working on a previous movie called Dune, directed by Jardowski,
what do you know?
Which got scrapped. But they were able to take these artists, which included Mobius, one of the best science fiction artists of the time,
sure,
and then brought in H.R. Giger, this very eclectic and a little strange artist from Europe who designed the creature. And he gave us one of the most iconic monsters in the history of cinema. Talking about Alien Romulus, I wanted this to be a great film, and it is a very good film. I'm very happy to say, if you don't have any reservations, go see this movie. It's very nice.
I think you put it third.
I would say it's third in the franchises.
And I would have to agree.
Yeah.
But it's nowhere near the greatness of the first two.
The gap between the quality of one and two and the quality of every other Alien film is so wide.
What is that, Ken?
It is because James Cameron did the sequel, and James Cameron is brilliant at writing sequels. His way of writing sequels is the way that everyone should do sequels. But then after that, it fell into a variety of writers and directors' hands, and it became very eclectic. I can never forgive the first opening scene of Alien 3. It's the worst, I think, opening scene in the history of cinema, because they kill off the two characters that survived Aliens, and we were so invested in these characters.
Let's look at those. Yeah.
Well, we'll talk about those in the podcast.
Yeah, good.
So, but this film is
Alien Romulus.
Alien Romulus is both a sequel and a reboot. Because, as you recall, Disney purchased 20th Century Fox a few years ago with the intention of looking at this vast archive of films that Fox had made to see which ones they could plunder for gold and resurrect and come out with new films.
I have to give it to your favorite studio. I was thrilled with Deadpool, as I always am.
Good.
Disney.
Good.
This is Disney.
This is Disney.
And then you give another blood fest here. I mean, this is Disney.
This is
a good point to make.
Disney had been releasing the Prometheus movies under the 20th Century Fox logo to distance themselves from the fact that these are R-rated, very violent movies.
Yes.
But now they no longer have that Fox logo, so they had to release this as one of their own films. But the important thing here is that this is a combination of a sequel and a reboot. I generally don't like reboots. Sequels move the story forward. Reboots move the story backwards.
My problem with reboots is one that you know I always have, which is if there's a book and then the movie's made in the book, I don't want to talk about the book. I don't want that comparison contrast. Mm-hmm. And with the reboot, it's the same deal, is it not? I mean, people are obsessed with well, they did this and they did that.
Reboots are almost fan worship. They take the original stories. That's true. The Ghostbusters reboot is a perfect example. Suddenly, everything, every minor prop that ever appeared in a Ghostbusters movie becomes a major plot point and has magical powers. I mean, the reboot of Star Wars, Luke's lightsaber is now magical. R2-D2 is now magical. And it completely fails the original story. And this is why I say Cameron was such a master with Aliens, because he wrote a story that took off logically, progressed, but had nothing to do really with the original story. He didn't try to rewrite Alien, and that was what was so good. This one is more of a reboot because this one, the opening 5 minutes of this are just laughable. If you know the Alien timeline, you know the storyline, you are going to be throwing popcorn at the screen for the first 5 minutes because it would never happen this way.
Well, the first acid drip, I was laughing. I said, here we go. Yeah, I know this monster.
Yeah. Yeah. They do some unforgivable stuff to set up the story so that they can tell the story they want to. The company would never go look for 20 years for wreckage of Nostromo. Nostromo was vaporized. Nostromo had a megaton explosion.
Oh, listen, we need to give just a thumbnail. And I'm going to try just a little bit by saying, look, you've got some young people who have been downtrodden, a very good indictment of the capitalist society, and they're going off on their own to some dead, it's not even a planet, it's a dead machine, right, in the air.
And this is where the story starts working. Once you discount the laughable first 5 minutes, it starts picking up pace. The company, Weyland Yutani, is much worse than we even were led to believe. It's running like the mines in the mining operations back at the turn of the century when the mine owned you.
Well, look, they want to get out of there. They want to go find their own place. They want to find the sun. They're going for the sun.
They want to find another planet that's 9 light years away, and all the ships they have access to are short range. But then suddenly they notice this space station drifting in orbit above their planet, and they realize it has cryo chambers. Let's go up there. Right. Let's pillage it for the cryo chambers, put them on one of our ships, and get to this other planet.
And we're sitting there yelling, don't do that.
And you just know that is going to be like a haunted house in space.
Somewhere in the depths of that decrepit old machine are some very bad actors.
It turns out that it's a genetics research lab run by the company that was doing research to turn the aliens into bioweapon.
What do you think about resurrecting Ian Holm?
I was very much against it. For the same reason I was against resurrecting Peter Cushing and Carrie Fisher and Harold Ramis and Ghostbusters.
What is it about it that you don't like?
This is the reboot. You don't need that. He didn't need to be there. But the reboot tries to tie itself very closely with the favorite elements of the original film. And it forces things into the story that have no business being there. You didn't need Nostromo. You certainly didn't need to bring back the original alien that Sigourney Weaver blasted out of the back of the space
station. Did they go and pick this supposedly dead species, out of there and bring it back? You don't do that either.
And as I said, I knew Dan O'Bannon, and Dan O'Bannon told me that the life cycle of this thing, it only lives 2 weeks. That was his original idea.
All right.
That is the big problem with the reboots, is it tries to force a lot of stuff into the story to tie it to the original movie, and it doesn't need to be there.
Okay, so I tried to get something in even before you did by mentioning Sigourney Weaver. This was, of course, the first Alien made her career. Made her life.
Yes, yeah. And then in second in Aliens, she became the first actress in history to get a $1 million paycheck for doing a movie.
What does that tell us about Kaylee Spaney?
It tells us that Kaylee Spaney, well, first of all, she got a lot of Sigourney Weaver's lines, and we get to watch her climb into a spacesuit exactly the same way that Sigourney Weaver did.
But I kind of like the kid.
I like her. I like all the characters. There's one character in this movie that I didn't live, that I wish had lived, because I really, really liked her as well. I think the cast is great.
Well, Spaney played Elvis's
wife. Priscilla Presley.
Priscilla
movie.
So she's somebody you've seen.
We have seen her in several films.
She's unassuming next to Sigourney Weaver.
Well, Sigourney Weaver at 6 foot one is a very towering, imposing figure. And I think she fills the bill nicely. And obviously this movie at the end leaves it open for another sequel. They set the stage. It's very deliberate that there's going to be another one.
All right, Ken, one of the things that I have to agree with you about the goodness of this film is that I very much like her brother.
Yes, yes.
Played by David Johnson. He's Andy.
Yeah.
He's an android.
Andy is a great character. There's several things in this movie that I thought were very original, very clever. There's a scene when they go shooting through some drifting alien blood.
Oh, Ken.
I thought that was fantastic. I love that scene.
Rain is her name.
Yeah.
I like that.
Yeah,
Rain.
I like that. I have no problem with
But we were talking about Andy, who's my favorite character in this one, even though I like her. But Andy, I'll tell you about Andy, just to start, a face that you've never seen before.
Yeah.
I mean, he has been acting before, but this face is so beautiful. And it's almost like the old masks, the good, the bad.
Yeah.
He's got a drooping face that is perfect for
And he gets to play sort of a Jekyll and Hyde character.
Yeah.
This is the kind of character that actors just love, because you can really do something here.
Yeah.
And he does. He does a nice job. He starts out and he's sort of a simple-minded, damaged android that's her friend that was programmed by her late father. And then she has to implant this chip in him, and it turns him into a puppet of the company, but still retaining some memory of his fondness for Rain. And then that character explores and develops. He develops more than any other character in this movie.
These are the echoes of the first brilliant two. That is because these first two emphasized character.
Yeah.
And everybody else, when they try to do it, they're just giving you action. This one gives you character and action.
It gives you character, action, some purpose, a lot of motivation, and
yes.
It's nicely done. There's things I would have done differently. I would have developed the genetic lab a bit more. I would have had more of a prologue of what that genetic lab was doing up there orbiting. We have a timeline, and I'm very happy they gave us a timeline. This movie is set about 20 years after Alien, but that still puts it 45 years before Aliens, because you've got this 65-year gap between the first two movies.
How do you think they did, considering that the set for the first Alien is just unforgettable? They do a little bit like 2001, one of those sets you just never forget.
What was so clever about Alien is that they pillaged a whole bunch of wrecked bombers and fighter planes to create the set for Alien. That cockpit they're sitting in was taken out of a vintage Vulcan bomb, RAF Vulcan bomber, so that it looks real, because it all is real. Really, really effectively done. I mean, the set for Alien is one of the most memorable sets in science fiction and in film.
Now, Romulus, I get the claustrophobia, okay, but I don't get that greatness that I had in the first Alien.
No, the first Alien was the set was so well planned out that you knew kind of where you were within the bowels of the ship wherever you went. You had a sort of a mental map, thanks to the quality of the filmmaking, of how the ship was laid out, so you knew where you were. You don't have that with Romulus. Romulus plays out more like a video game.
Yeah, that's a very good
It's almost like you're traveling, then you get a big daddy battle, then you're traveling, then another battle.
And there's nothing distinctive about the setting.
There's a couple of labs. There's the genetics lab, and then there's the lab where they find the tube of the goo. For the most part, I think that set could have been better.
Yeah.
And I think the whole genetic lab thing could have been better explored. That could have been a real haunted house like we had with the original Alien movie.
Yeah. Now, do you think that Kaylee Spaney as Rain, do you think she carries it off?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I have no problem with Kaylee Spaney character. She's a little too smart. She seems to always have the right answer to get through the situation when we don't have a basis for that character being
so knowledgeable. She does have a great line, though. She said, "I'll fix it."
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, she's the one that comes up with the idea, let's freeze the face hugger to get it off them.
Yes. And they do have the face huggers. Great monster. I mean, for all of us who like to preserve our beautiful faces, whoa, you have this glomming
but
right
we have no eggs. And this is a thing that bothered me as I'm watching the movie.
Where are
all the eggs? How do we have hundreds of face huggers and no eggs?
Ah.
We do have a new stage of the life cycle of the Z-Morph, which we haven't seen before, but I'm not sure it really adds anything to it, and I'm not sure it's something that Dan O'Bannon or James Cameron would have agreed to. So it's the film has a lot of high points and a few low points. You can't get around those low points.
So you mentioned the Xenomorph?
Xenomorph is the name of the creature. Yeah. Ever since Aliens, it's been called a Xenomorph.
Yeah. I was trying to think of its derivation.
Changing. So okay. Changing form.
Okay.
Changing form.
Okay.
So it's again, one of the great classic creatures, and Cameron really did a great job with Aliens of exploring the alien. Because in the first movie, you only have one. So it's this one creature on the space station. They have no weapons to fight it with, and it's a fight for survival. The second film, not a horror film. The second film, Cameron decided to go with a war movie, and it's the greatest science fiction war film, I think, of all time. A lot of people say that Alien and Aliens are among the two of the top 10 best science fiction films of all time. I might even put them in the two of the top five.
Okay,
really, they're not. It's not better than 2001, but would I put Alien as the second best science fiction film of all time and Aliens right behind? Yeah, I could probably do that.
12 years ago, Prometheus.
Prometheus.
Now, didn't they try to get a little deep on that one, going back to the origin?
Prometheus was not supposed to be an alien movie. The aliens were not supposed to appear in that originally. What they was going to do was explore the background of the space jockey, the creature that was a skeleton in the original movie in the pilot seat that had the ship full of eggs. So when Ridley Scott agreed to come back, he really wanted to explore that race. But Fox, being Fox, said, well, we're going to make twice as much money with this movie if we have aliens in it. So they wedged aliens into the storyline, even though it really is supposed to be about that other race.
Are you referring to that skinny skeleton at the end of this thing?
No, that guy is connected to the fourth Alien movie, the one.
Okay, you're too much.
Yeah, Alien 3 and 4 were basically written by Sigourney Weaver. There's a funny story. When she was given her $1 million to be in Aliens, she had two requests for James Cameron. She said, "I don't want there to be any guns, and I want to have sex with the alien." And James Cameron said no and no.
Right.
There was guns everywhere, and you couldn't do that. So once Cameron was no longer involved, she agreed to come back to 3 with the idea that there would be no guns, and there is really no guns in 3. And then she gets her sex with the alien in 4. So she had a strong influence in 3 and 4, and I'm not sure it was for the better.
I'm not ready to explore the sexual motif, but you're quite right. I alluded to that in the form of the monster itself being phallic.
Oh, okay.
Okay.
That is Giger. That is H.R. Giger. Now, H.R. Giger, when he was brought in 1978 to work on Alien, he was best known for designing satanic temples.
Hmm.
And he would design the furniture and the decorations on the walls for mostly in Germany and Austria for satanic temples. And somebody got a hold of one of his books of art, a thing called the Necronomicon, and saw an illustration in there and said, that's our creature. That's what we want. And they went out and to Giger, who's, I believe, Swedish or was, and they enlisted him to work on the movie, and he came up with a lot of the designs. The skeletal interior of the alien ship, the way it looks like a rib cage, that was all Giger. The shape of the alien, the space pilot, that was all Giger. But meanwhile, Mobius, this great artist, designed the spacesuits and the Earth ships.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So two great artists, one working on the creatures and one working on the human element.
Anything to talk about with Alien 3, with the little 3 up in the top? This is in 92?
Yeah, this is in 92 that Alien 3 came out. Alien 3, it has a strong following. There are people out there that really think it's a great film. I am not one of them. I can't forgive them for killing Newt and Hicks in the opening scene. That was an act of convenience because they wanted to focus just on Sigourney Weaver. But there's a lot of us that were very invested in those characters and that hard-fought battle they fought in Aliens for their survival, only to have them be disposed of in the first 30 seconds of Alien 3.
Not a bad pedigree. David Fincher is the director.
David Fincher is the director. At the time he took that, though, that he'd only been directing music videos.
Yeah.
So this was his first-time effort. But yeah, I'm not a fan, and I'm even less a fan of Alien 4. I actually like the Alien versus Predator movie a lot more.
Oh, do you?
Yeah.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah. This was something that fans were screaming for.
That was 2004.
That was something that fans were screaming for. They said, let's put them in the same universe and have them fight each other. And then the comic book came out, and the comic book sold well, so they finally said, all right, let's go ahead and we'll make the movie. And the movie did well. It's actually, I think, my fourth favorite of the Alien films.
We did, however, in Alien Covenant, right, in 17, have Michael Fassbender.
We had Michael Fassbender in Alien Covenant.
And Billy Crudup when he was, they were having that pretty boy in movies.
I don't think we needed the issue I have with the two Prometheus films is we, up until that point, we could assume that the aliens were just an insect race from some planet that got picked up by somebody to use as a weapon. And that was really clever, the idea that this is just some cicada on some planet. But, of course, we had to have a backstory to that, and that then we find out, no, they were created by an android or from humans. And it defeated and it demystified everything that we had believed about the aliens. We didn't need those movies. Yeah. We really didn't need those movies.
Well, back at our alien, Romulus, as the movie progresses, I find it less interesting, except for the relationship between Rain and Andy.
That is the core.
I think there's something very suggestive there that I like.
That is the core relationship in the film.
Yes.
And also how Andy interacts with the other characters.
Yeah,
there's
a
character in there that's very biased against him. That's a homage to the Sigourney Weaver and Lance Hendrickson relationship in Aliens, where she was very anti-synthetics because of what had happened with Ash in the first movie. Mm-hmm. A lot of what is in Romulus is trying to tie itself to things we saw in the previous films, particularly Alien and Aliens. We've got the pulse rifles back. We've got ships that look like Nostromo. We've got the keypads and the screens all look like they're right out of Alien. We even got an explanation as to what Mother is. We don't need all that. That's the problem.
Is he the chief science officer? Is Ian Holm?
Ian Holm was Ash, and he was the science officer in Alien. So we have Rook now, played by a CGI Ian Holm, being the science officer on board this Romulus
station. But don't you think
it's
kind of interesting to see how they work that?
I found it distracting.
I
sat there thinking.
I'm sitting there looking at the mouth, and that's obviously CGI, and then thinking, boy, these people have nerve.
They had taken the screenshots from Alien when the head is resting on a table, and they had CGI'd the mouth movements. But it was unnecessary. You don't need to go and try to incorporate every element from the original films into this movie to make it successful. Do the James Cameron thing. Write a new story. Move the story forward. Give us new ships, new things. And this is the problem I had with the Star Wars sequels, too. Too much of it was just a rehash of the original films.
But for people not geek like you, could probably enjoy it without doing all this intricate comparison contrast and look for the original elements of this.
It is a much, much better film than the things I'm putting down. When I say it's the third best Alien film, I'm putting it very high up. I really am. It's a great film. It's a lot of fun. It's a welcome addition to the Alien franchise. It opens the door for another sequel, probably with Kaylee Spaney and with your favorite character, without giving away too much. And I'm happy for that. There's things I would have done differently and things I find annoying, particularly the first 5 minutes.
Okay. Well, K.G. Klein, being the closest thing I know to an expert on these Alien movies, and we're going, what, toward eight or
seven? We're going towards eight. Later, I'll tell you the story of how I knew Dan O'Bannon.
Oh, good. I love it. What's your prediction? I don't even know what I'm asking when I say that.
Okay.
You know, we're leaving this off. Now we're going off into another year, and we're going to have, we know, another Alien.
Yeah, we're going to have another Alien, probably 3 years down the road.
Okay. Do you have any prediction as to what that might mean?
Well, we have two survivors. And we have of this, without giving away too much, and we have the Prometheus fire, this formula that was created in the movie Prometheus and then Covenant, that has the ability to change species. And that's, if you remember at the end of the movie, that's on board the shuttle. They took it with them. And there's only one reason why that thing would be in the shuttle with them is because...
And even I know that's promising something going to happen.
That was the idea. If I wrote in scripts myself, I picked up on that. It's there for a reason. So that opens the door that the next film, they're going to reach this Yar-Vega system, the two of them with this formula. And even if they may not have an alien or a facehugger on board, they've got this formula from Prometheus and Covenant that we know can change people.
I know you'll be here.
I certainly hope
that I'll be here. And we might even be sitting at the same table and talking again about it. So it's been wonderful. K.G. Klein, what about the family? What do you suggest to them? They're listening now. They're hoping for a summer film.
I would say 16 and up.